Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
I believe that the lower 48 is a hoax, and that Alaska is actually a flat disk all by itself floating in space, propped up by a couple turtles. Welcome to the Iditapod. That's right, it's a podcast about the Iditarod. Brought to you by Alaska Public Media and KNOM. Before we jump on in, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
I am joined in the studio today by two trail reporters. One is Benjamin J. Matheson, working for KNOM. He's been out on the trail before covering this race by radio. Zachariah Hughes from Alaska Public Media is also here. And we have a special guest, a new co-podcaster, Quince Mountain from Braver Mountain Mushing.
But I won't really be representing Braver Mountain Mushing because if I talk to my wife who's in the race during the race, my marriage may be over.
That's right. We need to mention that Blair Braverman is actually running the Iditarod and you guys are married and you're going to be following along the race on a snow machine. Is that correct?
Lord willing.
Yeah. Quince, where are you from? What's your deal? What's your wife's deal?
I'm from Mountain, Wisconsin, and I'm here with my wife helping our team get ready for the Iditarod race. We've been here in Alaska since November. But once the Iditarod race starts, my job helping the team get ready is over, so I'll get to contribute to Iditapod.
Nice.
I won't be focusing on my wife so much. As the race as a whole, I'd like to see this Dalles Elk Gorge everyone talks about firsthand. So right now my snow machine is in the shop in Wasilla.
And why did you want to do the trail by snow machine? Why not just fly to different points?
Well, I don't know a pilot. I don't have a big budget. And I guess I have a little bit of a masochistic streak, but I'd like to see the Iditarod Trail firsthand and... you know, it'll be a little faster than on dog team. I don't quite have the cold weather tolerance my wife has.
Ben, who are you and what is your deal?
My name is Ben Matheson. I've been lucky enough to be a part of this podcast for the last few years. I've worked across the state in public radio. I'm mostly a recreational trail reporter these days, but I've done my time and earned my chops at KNOM in Nome, where I'll be reporting for this time, as well as down in Bethel, where I've reported on the Kuskokwim 300 and was out on the trail a couple years ago. And I have to say, I'm super excited to be back. And it's just a glorious year to bring this all together. And the snow's out, the sun's out, and it's just a fantastic time.
Zach, we work very closely together. I kind of know what your deal is, I think, but maybe you should introduce yourself to the listeners.
My name's Zachariah Hughes. I have reported on the Iditarod for Alaska Public Media for the last few years, and before that for KNOM in Nome, where, like Ben, I got my start in Alaska and in radio reporting. I'll be flying along the trail and filing for our local newscasts and the statewide news coverage of the Iditarod and helping you coordinate and produce and report the Iditapod.
Great.
And I'm in Aries.
And in Aries. What's your sign, Ben?
Gemini.
Quince?
Virgo.
My Pisces. My birthday was yesterday.
It was February 28th.
That's the date of my birth.
What did you do for your birthday, Casey?
Went snowboarding all day. So we're gathered here today together to talk about the start of the Iditarod, what to expect farther down the trail. And we want to talk a little bit about the trail itself, but first we've got this big event coming up. That's the ceremonial start of the Iditarod. Can you explain that to me and the listeners?
Sure. The ceremonial start is really like the opening ceremony for the race. It takes place in downtown Anchorage. It's more really more like a pageant or a parade than anything else, a way for, you know, regular folks in Anchorage to get a chance to see the dogs, to connect with the event. There's a loop of about a dozen miles through the parks and trails across Anchorage, and a lot of people in Anchorage will stand on their backyards or stand out along the trails and kind of cheer teams as they go by. It's pretty much of a party and festive parade atmosphere. So that's the ceremonial start. It really doesn't factor into the race itself. It's much more about getting some visibility for the race, showing off sponsorship, and getting people excited about the race in Anchorage.
What's your take on it, though? I mean, it's kind of this thing that, you know, in a lot of ways, that's the only way that people are really going to get to experience the race and see the dogs and stuff. And then, you know, a lot of people look at it like it's kind of unnecessary as far as the actual race is concerned. So how do you guys come down on that?
I'll go first. I don't like the ceremonial start. I think that it's the worst part of the Iditarod because it's just stressful. It's chaotic. It's not an environment that a lot of the sled dogs or the mushers, frankly, are often in, where there's crowds of people and sounds overhead. It just, to me, feels kind of messy and a little bit forced.
I love the ceremonial start. It is a giant parade of dogs, and our dogs love it. We get to meet people, we get to meet the fans, and we do it without the pressure of the actual race start, where we need to make sure that we have the axe packed and the snowshoes packed and the right amount of dog food, and you haven't slept the night before, and there's all the logistics. So it's kind of this practice start where you get to take a rider along for 12 miles and share the trail, and there are the trail gators alongside cheering you on. And I think that that's an energy that our dogs will really pick up on. Not all teams are as social with people, but I think the Braver Mountain team, that I will try really hard not to talk about for the rest of the podcast, will enjoy the ceremonial start, as will I. I'll actually get to speak with the other mushers and eat a lot of hot dogs, and I think it'll be very cool.
And then the actual start is the next day in Willow. We definitely want to know about the trail itself, the Iditarod Trail. What's going on with that?
As best we know from this midweek briefing that we got from the Iditarod Trail Committee, this is a good-looking trail this year. There's a lot of snow for most of the 1,000 miles of the course. Even areas where the snow is a little bit sparse from year to year have pretty good cover. In the Dalzell Gorge, which is one of the most technically challenging parts of the race, there was some open water, and trail crews had to build about 20 bridges over that. So an already challenging section sounds like it's still going to be challenging. But Mark Nordman, the race marshal, briefed reporters that, you know, we've got a lot of snow all up and down the trail, 6 and 7 feet in some places. The other area where it looks like things are going to be a little bit challenging is along the coast, which is always challenging. But this year, Nome and the eastern Norton Sound from Unalakleet on up have been hit with some really intense storms, and there's not been good sea ice formations. So in some places like Unalakleet, the sea ice broke away, and there's actually flooding of the community. I'm not sure about other communities between there and Nome, but Nome's been getting pounded with snowstorms. The sea ice is not in good shape, and so a lot of that trail is going to be hugging closer to the land, and we'll see in the next week what happens with that.
They did say that there's light snow around the Iditarod checkpoint.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was like one of the areas, which is usually one of the areas that they don't have to worry about. But I guess for whatever reason this year, in that sort of interior middle section of the trail. One thing we've not talked about, at least today, is that the trail follows the southern route again this year. It did that last year. Usually there's it alternates between the northern route through Galena and then on over to Caltag in the upper section of the Yukon. This year it's the southern route again through the lower Yukon communities of Shagaluk, Anvik, and Grayling, then on up through Eagle Island to Caltag. That's because there were a few years in a row where the route had to bypass those communities in favor of places with higher snow. So they're getting back to those villages again along the southern route.
What do we think is going to happen? Who do we think is going to be some of the main contending teams in this?
I'll start with my short list of, 5, 10, 12 mushers, and those include last year's defending champion, Yor Lisef Olsom. Nick Petit has been within that top two or three the last few years, coming off a really strong Kuskokwim 300 race. And then a list of several mushers who are always dangerous no matter what. There's your Ali Zirkle, there's your Mitch Seavey. There are a couple YK Delta mushers who are always extremely dangerous. That's Pete Kaiser, who took fifth place last year. Richie Deal, who is right behind him out of Aniak. And those two have just been extremely close to that top spot. I could keep listing names, but those are a few that are at the top of my list.
My list looks pretty similar to Ben's. Some names that I would add to that are Jesse Holmes, who did pretty well last year. I believe he got seventh after kind of slingshotting from further back in the race and made up a lot of those spots.
Rookie of the year.
He's done pretty well in some of the races. In the Kuskokwim 300, he got third place earlier this year. His dog team looked really good. Matt Hall, another musher that I would add to the list. He was a contender for Rookie of the Year last year. Good interior musher and running again. You know, one thing that's curious to me this year is that the top finishers from the Yukon Quest are not going to be in the Iditarod. So that's first place winner Brent Sass, not there. Hans Gott, who has mushed in plenty of Iditarod. He's not going to be there. Alan Moore, not going to be there. Shares a kennel with his wife, Allie Zirkel, SP
same,
Kennels.
Same dogs probably, though. A lot of the same dogs.
Yeah, but they usually, the both of them usually run the Iditarod. Allie usually runs a more competitive team. Alan takes puppies or a B team typically. He's not running. So we have the top three finishers from the Yukon Quest, all of them not competing in what's you know, much smaller field than any of us have seen in the last few years at 52 mushers.
It's a smaller field, but it's just kind of more of a concentrated Iditarod, as my friend Tony said the other day. I mean, you have the 52 mushers, but the top sort of perennial contenders are still there. So it's not necessarily going to shake up a lot in the top 10. I think it's interesting no one's mentioned Wade Mars.
Good point.
Could be in there and has historically done pretty well. He had a fourth place finish a few years ago. Jesse Holmes, I do wonder, he got Rookie of the Year last year, seventh place. Is that going to make him too cocky this year? Is he going to try to be a little more aggressive to try and move up into that top five and then, you know, perhaps make some poor decisions? Because once you crack into that top five, all it takes is one mistake or one bad decision to bump you out. It's a different level there.
I will say, I don't know where Mitch Seavey has been training. Last year, he said that one of the impediments to his team keeping the pace that they've kept before was that there was deeper snow that didn't favor his training style and what his dogs were used to. I'm not sure how that's going to work this year, where he's been training, but with a denser snowpack on a lot of the trail, I think that is something to watch. Casey, what about you?
Well, I think it's funny that there are these guys that we've seen race the mid-distance races this year, and we kind of have an idea what they look like. You guys have literally looked at their dogs and seen them, and you too. I agree with all of you. I think we definitely expect Yor Olsom to be near the front. We expect Nick Petit to be near the front. Mitch Seavey, if we do have a real fast trail, and that's how he's been training, he's going to be up there. Matt Failer winning the K300 is pretty interesting to see with Pete Kaiser, the returning champ, finishing second this year behind him. I agree with Wade Mars. I think that's an interesting thing to point out, Q, that 2015, he got eighth place, 2016, fourth place, 2017, sixth place. That's three top 10 finishes in a row. And then he had to scratch last year and he's back. And he was kind of marching up into the ranks there and broke into the top 10 and stayed there for a while and obviously made a decision last year to scratch based on what was best for his team. I think we also need to talk about Rookie of the Year contenders. I think that's always a really interesting story. It's almost more interesting in a lot of ways than who's going to win the race. Q, who's your Rookie of the Year pick?
Well, I'll tell you about my Rookie of the Year is my wife, Blair, no matter what.
That's the right answer.
Who's the Rookie of your heart?
Blair's
not a rookie. She's the veteran of my heart.
The veteran of your heart. Rookie in the race. So she's your first pick, but who's your second pick for Rookie of the Year?
Oh, good question. I don't know, but I want to mention Ramey Smith.
Oh,
because
yeah.
For the top 10, I saw something in him training out at Denali Highway this winter. That man just has a look in his eye like he is hungry. And he never even stopped at the Alpine Creek Lodge, you know, where all the mushers kind of come and eat and take a rest. I mean, he was only camping out on the trail with his dogs. He'd be there 3-4 days, then take, you know, 24 hours off, go home. Then he'd be back camping with his dogs again in very deep cold over and again and again. And that's a kind of depth you see with the CV program for sure. But I would love to see Ramey Smith up there this year. And I'd love to see Nick up there too. But Nick, you know, one of his main leaders is Christy is in rehab this year and won't be joining him. So how's that going to affect his race? He has some yearlings in his main team. That's maybe okay. Last year he finished with at least one yearling that I know of, so that might work out well for him. You know, I wish him the best, but it's always tough to be down one of your veteran experience leaders.
And speaking of veterans, Ramey Smith, 22 finishes in Iditarod. So we've got Q's Rookie of the Year pick. That's a good pick. Right answer.
Wait, Ben, what did I say? Oh, I said my wife. But it's going to be hard to beat Ed Hopkins because even though he's a rookie, he's definitely a race veteran with a very deep and experienced kennel with Michelle Phillips.
With Ed Hopkins, we say rookie with quotation marks around it. That's my pick. Him and Michelle share the dogs. They mush out of the same kennel, share the same dogs, husband and wife. And his wife, Michelle Phillips, finished fourth in the Yukon Quest this year. So I imagine he's going to be taking a lot of those dogs, if not the whole team, on the Iditarod. His quote-unquote rookie year, I think he's got a real good chance of being rookie of the year. Zach, who do you think?
My pick for rookie of the year is Martin Apayac-Reitan, who splits his time. His father is Ketil Reitan, and his mother's from Koktovik originally, so he's grown up between Koktovik on the North Slope and Norway. Has grown up mushing, guiding polar bear tours with his father. He was rookie of the year in the Yukon Quest. This is his first time running Iditarod. I've seen him do some of his qualifiers, like the Kobuk 440. Really good dog care, knows them really well. And actually, I forget if it was last year or the year before that, but once the Iditarod was over, he and his dad and I think a small crew went from Nome all the way back to Koktovik.
That's amazing.
Which is pretty extreme. And I can tell you there's not as much trail traffic going that way as on the Iditarod. So it'll be interesting to see how he does with this 1,000-mile race right after the Yukon Quest. But that's my pick.
Ben, who do you think is going to win Rookie of the Year?
Two mushers I'm watching as rookies, not sure exactly about winning Rookie of the Year, out of Bethel, Nicholas Wickstrand, the Norwegian handler for Pete Kaiser, who's worked with him for a number of years, extremely competitive, sophisticated, and experienced musher. And Jessica Klaika, also from Bethel, has been mushing dogs for many, many years as a veterinarian, and both mushers are used to extremely marginal conditions and have really been training their whole lives up to this point.
Definitely could be a dark horse rookie of the year candidate. Some of those stories that come out of the back of the pack and the middle of the pack and the rookie mushers, the things that they have to deal with to just survive to try to finish this race are incredible. And of course, we need to wait till the race is happening to hear about what they have to go through out there. But right now, going into it, what do we think the big story about the Iditarod is this year?
I will say that, this time last year, we were talking about a doping scandal, about a, musher mutiny against the board, about a report coming out that the Iditarod's financial outlook did not look good. We were talking about all of that, and the temperature was just hot. I would say the story is this year, there's not really a story. The board has promised to make reforms. They've taken some of those seriously. It's a smaller field. I think that's pretty meaningful. What I've heard anecdotally is that people are not as enthusiastic about the Iditarod with its house in disarray. People are not often willing to talk about that on record. And that's, I would say, sort of part of the scuttlebutt around the race. But we've got a good looking trail. PETA is planning to have a presence at the start, but not like they did last year, not quite as intensively. They have said they're going to have a, a display or a demonstration during the ceremonial start in Anchorage. They do plan on being in Willow right after that, but it really doesn't feel like there's nearly as much tension as last year. And I can say, just as somebody that has to go and spend the next 2 weeks immersed in this world, I'm pretty thankful for that. I sort of jokingly said that personally, the theme for me this year is fun and friendship. And
that's our theme here.
Yeah, that's our that's the theme of our. There's no theme for the official Iditarod, but unofficially, my theme is fun and friendship. And you guys are invited.
But that's despite today's theme song.
Oh yeah, today's theme song, little ditty I made up in the car ride over.
The new theme song.
This is your song.
Well, let's do it together. We can do it as a chorus.
I'm going to turn Ben and my microphone
on. Ben, I want to hear your beautiful melodic monotone. All right. Three,
warm up
two,
those pipes.
One. It's the most stressful time of the year.
Zach, when you told me the other day the theme for this year's Iditarod was fun and friendship, I thought you meant the actual theme that the PR firm put out for the race, not like Zach's personal theme for covering the race.
Not beyond the what we would expect, really.
Ben, what do you any stories that you're watching or that you think haven't been brought up?
We haven't discussed much about the fact that it's going from a 16-dog race to a 14-dog race. We'll see if that really ends up being a factor or whether 14 dogs are just as fast as 16.
It's certainly easier to put booties on 14 dogs than on 16 dogs.
Yeah, man, that's 8 paws.
But you better, it's a little more pressure to pick the 14 correct dogs, I guess. Sometimes they say the race isn't won by who you brought, but who you left in the truck. It can be hard to leave a dog behind that you really would love and want to spend time with on the trail, but doesn't quite have it in them this year.
So if we've established anything here today, it's that there are a lot of questions remaining about the 2019 Iditarod. And one thing we really like to do here is solicit questions from the listeners of the Iditapod. One way to do that is to type out an email with your question about dog mushing or the Iditarod itself. and send that to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. But because this is a podcast, you can actually get on the podcast in your voice if you record a voice memo. That is an app on your smartphone. Pull that up, record yourself, send the audio file to, again, iditarod@alaskapublic.org. And today we have our first listener question for the 2019 Iditapod. It comes from Dan in Ohio. He wants to know, what's the best way to follow the race?
Hi, my name is Dan. I'm calling from Cleveland, Ohio. I was just recently in Alaska this winter and was lucky enough to go dog sledding. I got really interested in the Iditarod, and I'm wondering how you would recommend that somebody from the lower 48 stay in touch with the race this season and be able to follow the race as close as possible outside of this podcast, of course. I look forward to your suggestions. Thank you.
Zach, do you have an answer for Dan?
Besides the Iditapod and the coverage on the radio in-state from Alaska Public Media, my favorite source is the Anchorage Daily News newspaper here. They usually bring in really smart analysts and columnists. They've got great photographers and a great writer, Keegan Hanlon, who's been on the podcast before, out in the field and getting kind of the more colorful stories behind the front of the pack stuff. So no shortage of content from the Anchorage Daily News. And while you're at it, buy a subscription to the Anchorage Daily News.
I'll add that Sebastian Schnula, a longtime dog musher, Yukon Quest champion, will be doing his armchair musher reports along the trail, and he is an absolute machine of an analyst, reporter, and snow machiner.
Sebastian, S-C-H-N-U-E-L-L-E. Sebastian Schnule?
Schnule.
Schnule.
There's also...
Quince Mountain was made for doing podcasts. Did you see that? None of us thought to like tell people how to spell this guy's name.
We also didn't mention following the race on Musher Twitter, hashtag Musher Twitter.
Zach thinks that it doesn't exist.
I have been proven wrong since at Quince's living proof that there is, in fact, a Musher Twitter, and it is a spirited community.
Quince, how are you following the race this year?
I'm following the race this year on Musher Twitter, hashtag Musher Twitter.
But you're also literally following the race in person on a snow machine. So
I'm following the race on a Scandic Superwide, and I'll be reading Musher Twitter, hashtag Musher Twitter, which is a thing that, Zach, that exists.
Hashtag Scandic Superwide.
And Casey, what's your recommendation for if you were, I mean, no, you don't believe that there is an out-of-state beyond Alaska, but if you had to be in this mysterious netherworld, how would you follow the Iditarod?
Yeah, two things there. I believe that the lower 48 is a hoax perpetuated on us by the federal government, and that Alaska is actually a flat disk all by itself floating in space, propped up by a couple of turtles. Secondly, I will give another shameless plug for this podcast because I really do think it is a good way to follow the race. AlaskaPublic.org is where we are going to be posting stories from Ben and from Zach, as well as on KNOM.org. And I don't want to be a shill for the Iditarod, certainly, because I am not, but they do put out a lot of content on that website. You do have to pay for some of it, some of the best stuff like the GPS tracker, the videos that they post. But they hustle out there. It's kind of this amazing behind-the-scenes thing when you're out there to see those guys, they're snow machining, shooting video, transferring that, uploading it from the field. And you know, if you can afford it, that's not a bad way to follow.
The Iditarod Insider is effectively the media company that's attached to the Iditarod race, and they produce tons of content, almost like a sports channel, 24/7 for around. And then afterwards, they will very quickly cut together a documentary encapsulating the race. But it is a very hardy, very impressive operation, and they're some of the best at what they do.
Well, guys, I think that's all we have time for today. That was a great discussion. I'm really looking forward to the start of the race. Have fun out on the trail and be safe. I'll be looking forward to hearing your work. And I'll be a little lonely because it's just going to be me in the studio after this. But really going to be interesting to see what comes out of Iditarod 2019.
Remember, have fun and have friendship.
Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. For Ben Matheson, Zachariah Hughes, Quince Mountain, I'm your host, Casey Grove. And until next time, happy trails. Quince, tell us about the Brown Mile.
The Brown Mile is the first mile after a checkpoint, also called the Hershey Mile or Hershey Hill if it's an uphill. When the dogs kind of get going after a rest, after they've eaten a big meal on the trail, their digestion gets going as well. So you'll see evidence of that usually within the first couple miles of a checkpoint.